Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. I'm Grant Reher. A few weeks ago, I interviewed State Senator Dave Valesky, who represents New York's 53rd Senate District. Senator Valesky is being challenged for the Democratic nomination in the state legislative elections this coming November. And joining me today on the program is that challenger, Rachel May. Ms. May is the coordinator of sustainability education at Syracuse University and has held several local public service leadership positions, including vice chair of the Onondaga County Resource Recovery Agency, better known as OCRA. The 53rd Senate District consists of Madison County and parts of Oneida and Onondaga counties, including the majority of the city of Syracuse. The primary election to determine the Democratic nominee is September 13th, which is a Thursday. Note that although both Ms. May and I are employed at Syracuse University, and we've met before, we do not know each other well, and we have not worked together. Rachel, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Grant. I'm happy to be here.
So we are talking, as it happens, on the day after the Oneida County Democrats endorsed you, and the Onondaga and Madison County Democratic committees endorsed Senator Valesky. But typically, the pattern in these kinds of situations is the incumbent usually gets all of those Democratic committee endorsements. So what happened in Oneida County?
Well, I'm very proud of this endorsement because this is a committee that is pretty independent. They spent a lot of time interviewing both of us, and they asked really good questions. They're extremely active, and they are frustrated as Democrats that our state senator has been going to Albany for the last 7 years to undermine the Democratic leadership. And so they were really willing to go out on a limb. It's hard for a Democratic committee to endorse someone other than an incumbent. And they took that step boldly, and I am extremely proud of it.
You just mentioned there the undermining of the Democratic leadership, your phrase there. But I wanted to ask you a question about that. Your campaign initially focused on, when you first announced, Senator Valesky's participation in the Independent Democratic Conference, the IDC. This was a breakaway group of Democrats who caucus separately, and they were part of a majority alliance with the Senate Republicans. And there are other candidates who have challenged incumbent Democrats who were in the IDC, you know, and making that part of their main message. But of course, since your campaign's start, the IDC has dissolved, and its members now have rejoined the mainline Democratic Conference. So now that the IDC is dissolved, how does that affect your message about challenging the Democratic incumbent? How does that affect your message about what you just said about undermining Democratic Party leadership?
Right. That's a great question. So I'm very proud of the fact that the IDC has dissolved because it was the result of a year of really intensive organizing by myself and a lot of other people in this district and across the state. So I consider that a victory, but I also have to say that the IDC is a symptom and not the disease. And the disease, to my mind, is cynicism. I think even what got Donald Trump elected was this message that people have been hearing for years that it doesn't matter if I vote, it doesn't matter who I vote for, that the government is not looking out for my interests, all of those kinds of messages that are out there and that turn people off from politics. And the IDC, by coming into the district and telling the voters that we are good Democrats, we're progressive Democrats, we're doing this to advance a progressive agenda, and at the same time going to Albany and making sure that those progressive bills never even came up for a vote because the leadership was given over to the Republicans, that fed that kind of cynicism, I think. And then this decision in April to suddenly turn on a dime and say all of the things we've been saying about how important the IDC has been, how valuable it's been, we're throwing that all out the window and we're rejoining the Democrats. They didn't do it because they had a change of heart. They did it because they were afraid of our primary challenges. And they, I think, didn't want to have to defend their record to the voters. So I kind of saw that as an even more cynical move, not redressing the cynicism, but doubling down on the cynicism and adding a kind of dose of cowardice to it, too. And I just feel that what we do not need right now, at a time when our democracy is under threat nationally and not working very well in Albany, what we do not need is more cynicism. We need people who really will do what they say, say what they mean, make promises to the voters, and then follow through on them, and help people believe in our government again.
So you mentioned there the torpedoing of progressive issues rather than getting them on the floor for a vote, if I understood you correctly. Give me a couple of the most important examples of progressive issues that were never really taken up because of the IDC working with the Republicans.
It's hard to know where to start. There are so many of them, but let's start with our election laws. We have some of the worst election laws in New York State and the whole country. We make it harder for people to vote, harder for them to register to vote, and we make it easier for people to sway politicians with large donations than just about any state in the country. These are pretty easy things to fix. Early voting is done in 37 states, including a lot of very red states. And New York has not been able to pass early voting. So, for example, you mentioned that our primary is going to be on a Thursday. Nobody has voted on a Thursday before. And if we had early voting and they could have a week or 10 days ahead of time to vote, it would probably assure a much larger turnout in that primary. So here's an example of voter suppression and legislation that should be easy to pass. And it has passed in a bipartisan way in other states because it's good for the voters. But by handing over power to the Republicans to make all the decisions about what comes up for on the agenda, what comes up for a vote in any committee, and therefore what makes it to the floor of the Senate, the IDC has allowed the Republicans to block even simple legislation like that. And then you can go down the list, whether it's reproductive rights, whether it is criminal justice reform, whether it is a lot of important measures to do with health care. And it's just they're too numerous to number.
Well, part of this is getting into the weeds of the math and how the legislature works. But I do want to push this a little bit just to make sure that our listeners understand how the IDC worked. So, and you correct me if I'm wrong, what I would have trouble, though, following on what you just said is why then those issues, early voting, reproductive rights, would have had a better chance of getting a fuller hearing and consideration if the IDC had been not there and all of those members had been part of the Democratic Party. You still would have had a majority control, if I understand it correctly, by the Republicans. Their argument is that by working with them, they were able to open up certain things like higher minimum wage, different kinds of leave, you know, for families. Explain to me why that made the IDC made it even less likely when the Republicans had the majority anyway.
Sure. So if you want to just play the game of numbers, it is true that for some of the lifetime of the IDC, Republicans had a slim majority. But in 2013, voters gave Democrats a very clear majority in the Senate, and the IDC still threw the leadership to the Republicans. That would have been an opportunity to pass things like early voting, to pass things like election reform, campaign finance reform, which I think would then have made a difference, given that New York State has Democrats have a 2-to-1 edge over Republicans in registration in the state. And the only reason that Republicans have been able to keep even close to a majority in the Senate is because of voter suppression and gerrymandering. The IDC made those things possible. So if they would have gotten out of the way in 2013 and allowed the Democratic leadership to advance our democracy and make it more open to the voters, I think we would have seen a Democratic majority moving forward from there.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with Rachel May, who's challenging State Senator Dave Valesky for the Democratic nomination in New York's 53rd Senate District. So you've mentioned the voter registration laws and voter reform. If you were elected, what are the most important policy changes that you'd focus on in Albany? Where would you spend most of your time?
Well, obviously, the election reform is a big one, but the issue that got me excited about running for office is the New York Health Act, which I found out about when I was organizing last year against the efforts to roll back Obamacare. I was at a rally and a doctor was speaking, and the first thing he said was that among the things that Republicans were trying to bring back was lifetime caps on insurance. I ran into the problem with lifetime caps on insurance, which meant in the bad old days, insurance companies could just cut you off when they had spent a certain amount of money on you, no matter how sick you were. When I was 30 years old, my husband was dying of cancer, and he said to me one day that his greatest fear was that he was going to outlive his insurance and leave me with the debt, which meant he was less afraid of dying than of living under our health insurance system. And that is not a conversation that anyone should have with a loved one, especially a young person. He was 32 at the time. So when that doctor said that to me, that made me feel like I've got to do more than just show up at rallies and write letters to my congressman. But then he said something else. He started talking about the New York Health Act, which is a bill to provide health insurance for all New Yorkers, comprehensive insurance, that would also save the state tens of billions of dollars in health care costs. And it would transform our system of employment. It would make it easier for employers to hire entry-level workers. It would make it easier for people to leave a job they didn't like and start their own business or go back to school or raise a family. It would address a lot of really terrible distortions that are in our system right now. And so I realized that I didn't have to just fight against what the Republicans were trying to do at the national level. I could fight for something. So the New York Health Act is a big one for me. And I think it has a good chance of passing. But as we saw with Obamacare, excuse me, it was when you change something big and systemic like that that affects people's lives, there's a lot of opposition to that, and there's a lot of need to be out there really advocating for it and explaining to people why this matters and listening to their concerns and figuring out how to address them. And even though my opponent has said that he supports that bill, he is not someone who goes out and advocates like that. People have been telling me they're glad to see somebody with a passion for these issues and who's willing to articulate the complexities but also make clear to them why this is important. So that is a major issue for me.
You're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. I'm Grant Reher, and I'm talking with Rachel May. She's challenging incumbent State Senator Dave Valesky for the Democratic nomination in New York's 53rd Senate District. Rachel, you were talking about the Health Act there just before the break. I wanted to ask you a question about that. First of all, just to give this a more common language for our listeners, what you're talking about is the proposal essentially to have a single-payer system for New York State, correct?
Correct.
Okay. One question that I would have about that is, and it's obviously, you know, the big one about any kind of significant change. You already talked about the significance of the change, comparing it to Obamacare, but this would be even bigger in some ways for the state of New York. What about the folks who have what they regard as pretty good health insurance already through their employers? Syracuse University, an obvious example. The disruption that those folks would experience. Explain how this would work for them.
The New York Health Act is comprehensive care. It includes dental and medical and mental health and hearing, all kinds of things that aren't necessarily covered now or that you have to pay additional for. So it's, except for Prop possibly some really platinum level plans that people are paying extra for. I think it is as good health insurance as most people have. And having it be Medicare for all, essentially, or health care for all, would mean that a lot of the extra expenses and dysfunctions in the system would go away. So we right now have a lot of people who make use of emergency rooms as their primary care. And that is very expensive to the rest of us. That drives our premiums up. That drives up the premiums that our employers pay. Syracuse University pays $17,000 in employee medical benefits for me on top of the $6,000 or $7,000 that I pay. And that would go down because of all the savings that we would see. That would go down to the order of something like $2,000 for the university and $1,000 for me, something like that. So that it would suddenly become much less of a barrier to hiring new people. I think it would shift our whole employment system. But also, I even talked with a divorce lawyer a few weeks ago who said that you would not imagine how many people stay in toxic relationships because they need the health insurance. We have a lot of ways that our healthcare system really distorts our choices that we can make. And so I think even for people whose health insurance is good right now, they may have issues with getting their children covered or getting elderly people covered that they're still grappling with. And so I think we can't just look at my health insurance, which is excellent, but how it works for the whole society, because that affects us too.
Let me ask a different kind of question. You know, elections are always about drawing contrasts in the end, and you can only pull one lever. So I wanted to ask you a different question about the incumbent. Is there anything about Senator Valesky's relations with constituents in the 53rd District or his constituent service that you would take issue with or that you would do differently if you were elected?
I have been surprised as I've been going around the district and talking to people that there are a lot of areas in the district where people feel that he does not show up and he doesn't really listen to their concerns. So I would hope to be able to do a better job than that. I think that there are definitely some people who, and there will always be people who feel that, who are dissatisfied, but I've been hearing it enough to feel that maybe after 14 years, he's kind of taking his voters for granted, and that certainly is not what I would be doing.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to The Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media, and my guest is State Senate candidate Rachel May. I wanted to spend some time now to get your views on different policy positions, and I've got kind of a long list here. So if you could be brief, I'd appreciate it. I also want to squeeze some other questions in at the end. First of all, would you want to make any significant changes to the state's tax laws? Would you be in support of any significant changes there?
The tax laws, I'm in favor of making our tax laws more progressive than they are. I honestly haven't looked at the details of the millionaire's tax that's being proposed or that sort of thing, but I definitely think that we have too much income inequality in this country. In the state, I think in terms of the way education is funded, that is an embarrassment, and it has led to terrible inequalities in our schools. And so for our property taxes, for example, to be, for a lot of schools, the sole source of income for their schools, I think that's a mistake because it builds in a lot of inequalities. So I would like to look at the tax system broadly, but I understand it's a complicated thing to change.
On the educational funding scheme, there's different ways to attack that. You just mentioned looking at where the money is derived from. What about the funding from the state to the cities? That's been a perennial issue with the court case on this, and then the question of whether that court case is really being followed and how much effort is going into really putting it through. The governor has taken some criticism on that. What would you like to see there?
Well, year after year, we have seen the city of Syracuse schools underfunded and lots of our rural schools as well not getting the funding that the courts indicate that they should get in order to address some of those inequities in funding. I'm aware that the formula is old now. The formula needs to be updated. We need to really look comprehensively at where the money is going. Apparently, the state gives money to school districts, and the school districts are not reporting back about how they're actually using that money. So I think that's important to have that full information. But state money ought to be targeted to making sure that every child has access to excellent public education. And that is not how the formula has been interpreted at the state level. So Syracuse has been underfunded sometimes up to $40 million a year in what it should be getting and what it's not getting. So that kind of disparity, and I know in other cities it's even more, we need to redress that. Even at a time when there are budget shortfalls in the state, I think education is so critical that we need to find the money for our children.
And what about the state's economic development policies? That's been a source of some controversy in recent years. What's your take on that, and what changes would you like to see there?
The main thing that I think we should do for economic development, especially in this region, has to do with infrastructure. You need to make it possible for businesses to survive and thrive and hire people and be the engine of our economy. And right now, we both in urban and in rural areas, we have deficiencies in high-speed internet and in transportation and in our roads and bridges and water infrastructure, all those things. Businesses depend on reliable infrastructure. So I don't think the solution is to go in and pick an industry and say, we're going to put a lot of money into this from the top down. I think what you do is you build literally underground. You put in the infrastructure that the businesses need, and you let them figure out what's the right business for our area and what do we have the passion to make work.
Would you want to codify at the state level the abortion rights that are contained in Roe versus Wade? That's been an issue in the state.
That's a big issue. The last time we passed a law on that was before Roe versus Wade was enacted, and we still have abortion in the criminal code in New York State, and that's just wrong. It means that with the efforts at the national level to chip away at women's reproductive rights, New York women are not going to be protected. So we definitely need to update that one.
And would you add additional firearm regulations on top of those that are already contained in state law, and in particular, most recently, the SAFE Act?
There are some really good proposals for that. There's one to extend the period of time for background checks before people can purchase guns. Right now, it's so short that there isn't time to do a real background check. So that's one that I strongly support. I do think there, personally, that there is no need for people to have military-grade automatic weapons. They're not good for hunting. They're not useful for self-defense. I think that that is one where we should really be cracking down.
So let me ask two follow-ups on that. The criticism, I guess, or the response to the proposal to put additional time in for the background check is that often when that is done, what happens is that NICS check is basically an instant check. That's the way it's designed. It's designed to be done quickly. What happens in effect is that check is done instantly, and then there's just a 7-day waiting period. I mean, you know, it's like nothing's really done with that extra time to delve into that person's background. How would you do more there than just basically put a longer time window in?
Well, my understanding is there are quite a few cases where they just aren't able to get the information in the period of time, the 3-day time period that has been set up until now. So And I think those are probably often some of the problem cases where you really want that extra time to be able to determine if the person is worthy of the responsibility of having gun ownership.
But who will do that? Tell me how that will work. I know I'm pushing on the details
right.
here, but it's...
This is one where I don't know the details.
Okay.
I do know that I greatly respect the people who've been putting this forward, and so I would... not necessarily defer to them, but I would trust them to have put it together wisely.
Okay. Let me move on to a different kind of question. How would you assess the performance of Governor Andrew Cuomo?
Governor Cuomo has...
And we've got just a couple minutes left to make it more difficult. Even less, actually. So in a nutshell.
He has a lot of things to brag about. I think the... fracking ban is a good thing that he's done. I think he is right to crow about a number of things like paid family leave and that sort of thing. I think we could have done a lot more if we would have had a Democratic leadership in the Senate. And I believe that his credentials as a progressive could be a lot stronger if we could have brought him more progressive bills to
pass. So let me interject, just a couple seconds left. I'm going to put you on the spot here. So are you supporting him or Cynthia Nixon in the primary?
I am not endorsing in the primary. I am very much involved in my own primary and kind of laser focused on that.
Understandable. That was Rachel May. Again, the primary is September 13th. Which is a Thursday, not a Tuesday. Rachel, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with me.
Oh, thank you, Grant. This has been fun.
You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media, Conversations in the Public Interest.
The Campbell Conversations, Conversations in the Public Interest, was hosted and produced by Grant Reher, engineered by Tom Fazio, and edited by Jason Smith. Campbell Conversations is a joint production of the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University and WRVO Public Media. To learn more about the program or to hear previous interviews, visit wrvo.org/Campbell Conversations.